This is
an inconvenient belief.
Hello ones, happy Thanksgiving, whether you're listening on Wednesday, Thanksgiving Day itself, maybe Friday, maybe you're driving back from your holiday weekend, whenever it is, happy Thanksgiving, hope you're having a nice holiday. We have a very, very special episode here today for a very, very special occasion. Not only is it Thanksgiving, but the Giants have hit potentially rock bottom, and they have finally relieved Mr. Jason Garrett of his responsibilities as offensive coordinator of the New York Football Giants. To get this episode going, we have a very special report from our currently foreign correspondent, Mr. Zach Perry.
Willis, I watched the Giants game last night, and we were probably the most boring I've ever seen us be. I fell asleep in the third quarter. And the score was the same, 10 when I went to sleep, 10 when I woke up. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers did really well last night. Our offense was so bad that we fired our offensive coordinator today, Jason Garrett, which you've probably talked about in your solo shtick before my solo shtick. A lot of words there. And it was a really bad game. Garrett deserved to be fired. I'm hoping there's more firings to come. I think you could fire infinite people on the Giants at this point. I think the offense will remain terrible because I don't know why it would get any better. Saquon looked pretty good, to be honest. I'll say that much. Saquon looked better than usual. That's my solo shtick, man. That's it. I would love this to go up and be one of our infamous solo episodes. The introductory theme music was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and you can find more of his work at incompetech.com or .org, one of those two. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Something about infringement copywriting, all rights reserved, Zach and Willis. We wish you an inconvenient Bluth. And solo stick.
Thank you, Zach. Zach is currently in Mexico, and that is his report from the field. So now I'm just going to talk, and if you are not up for listening to that, which would be entirely understandable, you can go ahead and shut this episode down. No hard feelings. And we won't know anyway. So the Giants lose 30-10 against the Tampa Bay Bucks on national TV on Monday Night Football, although how many people actually watch Monday Night Football is up for debate. National TV, though, nonetheless. I think pretty clearly this was the worst game for the Giants since the blowout at home against the LA Rams. This was one of Daniel Jones' worst games of the year. Probably, almost certainly better than the game against the Rams, but still quite poor. One of his worst three games of the year, according to PFF grades. But, whatever metric you want to use, advanced, basic, or just purely visual, this was quite bad by Danny Dimes. I don't think I've called him Danny Dimes in a while. Maybe I have, but I don't think I have, and I do not think that's a coincidence. It's hard to break out all the things that are going on here. Obviously, we are recording this after the Jason Garrett firing on Tuesday morning. The only thing that's surprising about the Jason Garrett firing, to me anyway, is that the Giants did it mid-season, two-thirds of the way through the season, or however you want to count it now with the 17 games and the bye week and blah, 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 because this organization has been so conservative. But I think it became clear, two things became clear. One, Jason Garrett was not working in this role, and how vicious you want to be about that, and how much he's to blame for that, how much was the kind of strange occasion of his hiring when Joe Judge came in as a very young head coach. Jason Garrett had these pre-existing ties to the Maras, to New Jersey, to the Giants, to every relevant part of the situation, really. Even the NFC East as the immediate... Well, he was still the coach of the Cowboys when Joe Judge was hired. So, you know, basically had no days outside of the NFC East. You know, obviously, we've all seen a lot of people just going absolute gloves off on Jason Garrett. And I understand why. The offense has been absolutely putrid. And whatever you think of Jason Garrett, I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about how bad the offense has been all of this year, all of last year, with very, very few exceptions. And, you know, if you want to talk about the offensive line, yeah. I mean, if you've ever listened to this podcast or anything else about the Giants, the offensive line is terrible. We know this. It's been terrible for years and years and years. Who's most responsible for that? Well, it's Dave Gettleman, obviously. But you can only use that as an excuse for so long. The offense could have been producing more than they've been producing, regardless of the quality of the offensive line. That's just, it's that simple. The offense has been so bad that it cannot be solely attributed to the strength or lack thereof of the offensive line. So there's that. You know, it also became clear that Joe Judge probably had to do something to preserve his own job. And maybe that doesn't mean he was going to be fired at the end of the year, although I think that's entirely possible, to be clear. But at the very least, it meant that Joe Judge had to do something to increase ownership, management, and certainly the fan base's faith and trust in him as the coach of this team, as the, you know, de facto head of the program. Firing Jason Garrett was, you know, easily the easiest choice to make, the most obvious choice to make. I mean, I'm repeating myself here, but there's nothing too complicated about this. It was the obvious choice. If you want to do one change that's fairly substantive, that's not just tactical, it's not just in the play calling, it's get rid of Jason Garrett, because Joe Judge can't get rid of Dave Gettleman, who obviously is overdue to be removed. We've talked about this a million times also. And Jason Garrett is essentially the most powerful person under Joe Judge. The offense is clearly weaker than the defense. Clearly. There's just no doubt. And so Jason Garrett, see ya. There were also many rumblings that Joe Judge and Jason Garrett didn't get along, really. You know, it's unclear that Jason Garrett really gets along with some of the more important players on offense. Who knows? This stuff is not substantiated. But is the obvious scapegoat move. And so if you're Joe Judge, and I'm not saying he was wrong to do it, but firing Jason Garrett probably buys him some time. Again, not that he was necessarily going to be fired at the end of the year, but it buys him time to have more confidence from basically all involved and observing parties. So there's that. And I think that should be counted in more than anything. Ultimately, these guys are trying to save their jobs. Ultimately, they're trying to improve their own standing, both with the team, with the league, with the kind of broader football gentsia. And you noticed, especially after that Monday night game and during that Monday night game, the national press, the national analysts were really, really down on particular things that Jason Garrett were doing, particularly the one play in which the three Giants receivers kind of all ran routes that clustered them smack dab in the middle of the field. Daniel Jones had no open receivers. He was very heavily pressured and just had to kind of throw it into the middle of the field, bounce the ball. There was kind of vaguely a receiver in the area, but really not. And this was just embarrassing for everyone involved. So, where do we go from here? I don't think it's really worth talking that much about the Tampa game. The Giants weren't going to score more than 30 points. If they had been closer, the Bucs probably could have scored more than the 30 points that they actually scored. I mean, they put in Blaine Gabbert at the end of this game. So the defense was a problem here, too. On the other hand, Tampa Bay Bucks, the returning Super Bowl champions. Are they banged up? Yes, but they're at home. They still have Tom Brady. They still have an overall very strong roster. They weren't going to drop another game, as Zach mentioned in last week's episode. So anyone who's upset that the Giants lost the game, on its face that the Giants lost, is deluded. Okay? Let's get that out of the way. But the way in which the Giants lost was bad. Clearly bad. Danny Jones played terrible. Saquon was a lot stronger in the passing game, but he is just nowhere near being as valuable as his contract, certainly as the draft pick, number two overall, and as this extension, which I'm still very afraid that the Giants will sign him to soon, would suggest he's worth. Now, I think that the odds of that extension actually happening are reducing a lot every day they go down. But it's still quite concerning. Kenny Galladay still basically a no factor. The sole touchdown for the Giants in this game is when they got the ball with extremely fortunate field position and threw a pass to their best offensive lineman. Now that's cute as a novelty and good for Andrew Thomas, but this is a team that supposedly has all the strength at the wide receiver position. And we can get into that when Zach's back, because frankly, it's very depressing what's been happening with Galladay on a number of levels. That they couldn't score, and that the 3 points they really put together on their own was on the very first drive. Then they get this really kind of fluky touchdown, and that's the full scoring portfolio, whatever noun you want to use there, of the team for the entire game. Look, we'll see. At some level, the Garrett firing allows you, at least in theory, to tourniquet all of this off and say, what do we get going forward? What does that look like? What does the Freddie Kitchens play calling, which has not been confirmed? Joe Judge says he will not confirm that Freddie Kitchens will call plays because it's a competitive advantage for the other team, in this case the Eagles, to not know. Now, the Eagles have said that they are planning for Freddie Kitchens to be the play caller. You know, I'm certainly not well-versed enough in how these preparations go to tell you if that matters a great deal. We've seen Freddie Kitchens call games, but in the recent past, very, very few. With this team, just one. I don't know how representative his time with the Browns is, but regardless, maybe you see in the next few games a huge turnaround from the Giants. You see Daniel Jones make confident, intelligent choices on a consistent basis. You see more explosive plays, which is probably the biggest problem right now. I mean, we've talked forever about Daniel Jones' turnovers, but as Zach and I talked about a few weeks ago, you can live with turnovers if on the other side of the turnovers you're getting huge explosive plays. You know, if you're going to dial up the risk-reward, you want the reward. So we'll see. We'll see. And that's not the hottest take in the world. But we're going to have to, because we don't have enough to go on right now, other than I think if you have anything other than an open mind, if you have anything more positive than an open mind, I think you're trading on something that isn't exactly evidence. And that's putting it kindly. Again, the defense in this game, I mean, not at all encouraging, but I am much happier to give them the benefit of the doubt and say you're still playing against a very difficult opponent, and this is clearly an inferior team, the Giants, to the Bucks. And so wipe off and move on. But the biggest fear going forward, for those of us who think that the Giants need to make really substantial, really wide-ranging changes in the personnel, at all levels of personnel, from the player roster to the coaching staff to certainly the front office, and you know, ownership would be great, but that's not going to happen. For those of us who believe that this is what has to happen for the Giants to be consistently, I mean, let alone good, just watchable, just worth your time, they are heading into, by far, the easiest stretch of the year. The schedule is the easiest. The opponents are the easiest. Now, the Eagles have come on pretty strong recently, so you know, maybe the Eagles are actually good. I don't really think so, but they're better than the Giants right now. No doubt about that. If the Giants all of a sudden look good, it might be pretty difficult to tell how much of that we should invest in and be excited about and be confident in versus beating up on bad teams. And how much their reputation and the assessment of Freddie Kitchens will benefit from these teams being bad or being, at the very least, worse than the teams that the Giants have played so far. I hope to God that this is factored in at the end of the year by the Maras and the Tishes and whatever outside help I'm hoping they employ to figure out what happened and what needs to happen. Because we've seen it before that finishing strong in a completely unrepresentative way can buy time for people who do not deserve it, who are not up to the job. And if that happens again, then shame on everyone who makes that choice, because we've seen it before. And it is a waste of everyone's time. It sets the team back. It makes the fans even more disillusioned with what's going on, less likely to be engaged in the team. And these players have to keep playing for a team that they know has no hope of achieving anything. Now, that will always be true for some teams in the league, because there always have to be winners and losers, obviously. But, one, they're professional athletes who have a very limited time to make hay. And two, this is a very violent game. So, at the very least, they should be taking on that risk with a legitimate chance to be successful. Not necessarily win the Super Bowl every year, but be successful in some meaningful sense of successful. And that's not happening right now for basically anyone on the Giants. So, look, if I'm being honest, I want this to be a complete bottom out. I think maybe Judge can grow into a good head coach, but he has not shown me enough to be confident in it. You absolutely know that Gettleman has to go. So move number one, you get rid of Gettleman, preferably as soon as possible, so you can get a jump on other good candidates, and so that he can't continue making disastrous choices, because that's what he does. And if that general manager or president of football operations or whatever title you end up giving this person says, hey, I want to work with Joe Judge, that's my choice, fine. Then I'm happy giving Joe Judge another year. But I would want to know that that was the choice of this person, independent of the weird dysfunctional incentives and constraints imposed by ownership, which is almost certainly a major part of Jason Garrett's involvement in this team from the beginning, and how the Giants threw away another year and a half because of it. And I would want to know that that decision maker, this GM, was the best possible person in isolation. I don't want to hear about some connection to Jersey or the tri-state area or the family or having worn a blue shirt once. I don't care. Nobody cares. Nobody should care. I mean, Mara cares, obviously, but that's his mistake and shortcoming. Get the best possible person. Hopefully it's someone who's open-minded, progressive, forward-thinking, because the Giants are obsessed with this kind of highly traditionalist, highly conservative, highly dull and unentertaining. I don't even really know what it is exactly, but legacy, mythology, you know, you could call it a mystique, except there is no mystique around the Giants. They play in an incredibly depressing stadium, in the middle of nowhere. As Zach has mentioned a million times, the people involved aren't exactly entertaining, except for one or two guys. You know, they barely even experiment with the uniforms. I have no confidence that they will go out and try something new. But if ever there were circumstances that inspired or even compelled them to do so, these would be them. Right now. So with that, Jason Garrett's gone. The Giants drop another game. They probably reach a new emotional and practical low for the season. And any hope inspired by Jason Garrett being gone, I think, is largely illusory. Doesn't mean it's the wrong choice. I think it was absolutely the right choice. And that doesn't mean that there's a whole lot of new hope. Anyway, brief check-in on probabilities from footballoutsiders.com. The Giants have now a 0.9% chance to make the playoffs, and let's hope that they don't sneak in on that one. They have a 35.6% chance of getting a top five draft pick with their own pick. And right now, the Chicago pick that the Giants will be getting as part of the trade in the first round last year, that pick is a 38.5% chance to be in the top five. So, roughly the same odds. But you combine those, and that means that the Giants have roughly a 60% chance of having at least one top five pick. And by God, folks, they're going to need it. They are going to need it. Week 12 preview. Alluded to this earlier, but 1 o'clock Eastern in Corporate Insurance Stadium. Giants play the Philly Eagles. That'll be on Fox. And right now, time of recording, Giants are 3.5-point underdogs at home against a division rival that everyone thought would be worse than them at the beginning of the year. What is there to say? I think the Giants would clearly lose this game if not for the complete wild card that comes from the offensive shakeup. I have no idea how to price that in, but if I had to bet, I would say straight up the Eagles win. Do I think they will cover the 3.5-point spread? No. I think the Eagles will win by 3. All right, that does it. Wish I could give you more. Wish I could give you a few more laughs, but frankly, the laughs come as a byproduct of the conversation. And this is me staring at the computer, trying not to articulate my most angry thoughts about the Giants for the show. That said, I am almost 100% numb about the team, and so I don't even know if there's genuine anger left. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else. Apple Podcasts does help us the most, though. You can send us an email directly to You can send us an email directly to hello@inconvenientbluth.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Inconvenient Bluth. As always, our introductory theme music is composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find more of his work at incompetech.com and check out the Creative Commons license for our using his work on our site. That's inconvenientbluth.com/credits. And with that, I, Zach, we wish you an inconvenient Bluth.